Hey, I'm Ricky Howard. I'm host of the DoD Contract Academy podcast and owner of DoDContract.com. And in this episode of the Business Growth Architect Show, I'm going to talk about why small businesses on average make $2.34 million a year selling to the U.S. government, how they sell to the U.S. government, and why the government spends and buys just about everything that you could think of, including what you sell. If you want to find out how you can sell your product, service, technology to the U.S. government, then listen to this episode. And by the end of the show, you're going to have at least three great strategies that you can take with you to sell to the government.
Welcome to the Business Growth Architect Show. I am Beata Shalette. I am the host. I want to welcome you to our globally top 10% ranked podcast, where you will hear from industry experts about the strategies that are working right now to unlock hidden opportunities in any market so that you can grow your authority and scale your impact. And now let's get started with the show. Hello and welcome back. This is your host, Beata Shalette from the Business Growth Architect Show. Today, I'm talking with Rick Howard. I'm going to talk about something that a lot of you probably have heard about. Some of you may have done it. And those who have done it, I want to guess 90% are really frustrated by it. Whereas probably 100% of you think, how am I going to be able to get these juicy, lucrative government contracts that so many people talk about as being the magic bullet to business success? Rick, I'm excited to have you here. You are from DoD Contract, and I can't wait to talk to you about government contracts. Welcome to the show.
I love talking about government contracts. No, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
So for somebody who doesn't know what that is and has never heard about this or you, would you give us a quick introduction?
Sure. So I think the first thing that I would say is most businesses, when they think about government contracting, especially if they're not involved in it, typically are thinking about defense contracts, and typically they're thinking about the big weapon systems. You hear about a government contract or defense contract with Boeing or Lockheed, or you hear about someone getting in trouble, you know, for doing something that they shouldn't have been doing. I would say most businesses aren't thinking that the government is potentially buying what they're selling. So that's how I usually start this off. And to clarify, the U.S. federal government is the single biggest purchaser of goods and services in the world, and they buy just about everything. And although we help a lot of different companies, I don't think any of them are involved with weapons or those big weapon systems. It's all things you might buy in a store, technology, software, those type of things. So government buys everything, and they have to buy from small businesses. So there is a requirement that 23% of their purchasing is going to be from small businesses. And currently, of the over 32 million businesses that are small businesses in the U.S., it's less than half of 1% of those businesses are actually selling to the federal government.
So I find that really interesting. When we had our pre-conversation, I said to you, yeah, well, but my client that, you know, does blazers, that'll never work. And what was your answer to that?
Oh, of course, the government buys blazers. And actually, it's funny because it's actually the military, the Department of Defense. If you look at small business contracts, and it changes year over year, right? But, you know, for instance, 2021 specifically, because I was just looking at those numbers, you know, over half of the small business spending was DoD. And the Department of Defense, if you've never been on a military base, you know, and there's military bases all over this country and all around the world, every one of them has people living on them. They're small towns, small cities. So everything that you would need to live in a city or town is probably on that base, which is funded by a government contracts, to include something called the BX, which at least that's what we call it in the Air Force, which is going to have things like blazers and suits and clothes and sneakers and socks and all of that stuff.
It's fascinating to me because when I think about this, I'm a certified woman-owned business and I'm certified on small business under the SBA and micro business. So take us sort of through this idea of what do I need to do to prepare myself for these kinds of contracts, and how do I know that my business is ready for a contract with the government?
Yeah, no, those are good questions. And we talked a little bit before about kind of the frustrations some businesses have when they try to sell to the government initially. They go to the government websites, which for the most part, are not run very well. A lot of them are not intuitive. Some of them have made some improvements. But I think starting with the biggest mistake that companies make, starting there so your audience will know to avoid that, and then we can talk about what should you be doing. So the biggest mistake companies make is they'll go to a website called SAM.gov. And SAM.gov is right now, that is basically the repository for all of the federal solicitations. Meaning if the government's going to buy something, not every solicitation, but most of them are going to come through SAM.gov. It's also where you register your business to sell to the government. So what companies do usually when they learn about government contracting and they've heard of the spending or they did some research, they register their business, they go to SAM.gov and they start looking for what's called a request for proposal or request for quote, which is an official government solicitation. And they write a proposal and they don't win. And they write another proposal and they don't win again, which, by the way, writing a proposal is a lot of work. So it's not like, you know, something you're going to do in 10 minutes. So once they do this a few times, they start seeing, well, not only are they not winning, it looks like their competitors are winning. Maybe it's even the same people, the same companies. And it almost looks like those solicitations were written for those companies, right? So the inevitability of the company that's making that mistake throws their hands up in the air and says either, hey, it's rigged, or I don't know how to do this. Usually, maybe there's something illicit going on when they're done and maybe they walk away. The process, though, because federal, I guess a good way to think about this is when the government buys things, they cannot buy them the same way you or I do. This is basically a process that's been regulated by politicians for over 200 years. I mean, at one point we had over 50,000 pages in regulations and policies that actually someone like myself, I'm a former government acquisitions officer. So if my team was going to put someone on contract, you have a lot of policy and regs and different things you'd have to digest and understand in order to actually put someone on contract. So without going into 50,000 pages of policy, what I would tell everyone is by the time the request for a proposal or request for quote comes out on SAM.gov, you are at one of the final stages of the acquisitions process. There are things that are happening before that, usually 6 months, a year before, that you need to be aware of. And so if you're engaging when the solicitation comes out, you're, for the most part, you're pretty much too late to the table, right? The handcuffs are going to be on the government office. So meaning that just the way the federal acquisition regulations are now, if I was still in the government as an acquisitions officer and you put in a RFP, but maybe you have some questions, you're seeing it for the first time, maybe it's a software tool that you're proposing, I'm not going to be able to answer your questions, right? Because if I answer you specifically, that could be seen by your competitors as undue influence or preferential treatment. And it could be grounds for them to protest an award to your company, right? So I might answer that publicly, like meaning I might put out a notice on SAM.gov that gives that information to everybody, but that's as far as I would go. Now, before that solicitation comes out, there's something called the market research phase. So this is really where your listeners are going to want to engage in government contracting. As an acquisitions officer, my expertise was not software tools. It was putting companies on contract and managing those efforts, right? So by the way, a contracting officer or a team of program managers, they're probably doing hundreds of contracts, right, in different areas. So they need to talk to the people that are experts in whatever it is they're buying. So if it is a system or a tool or a piece of technology, for instance, they're going to reach out to companies that provide that technology, or they'll put something out called a sources sought, a request for information. Now, this is where I would say if we're just going to break it down, this is where I would recommend everyone start engaging. I wouldn't even look, my clients, we don't look at RFPs or RFQs unless we've worked them 6 months prior. We're looking for sources sought and requests for information. And those, much less rigid. It's a much easier response. Now the program office can talk to you. So you can do things like set up a meeting, set up a demonstration. You can recommend that they include things in the solicitation when it comes out. Or if you put yourself in a different set of shoes where you have responded to a source's sought, which is basically helping that office write the solicitation. So you're kind of doing them a favor. And maybe you are a woman-owned small business, like you just said. You can recommend that they set it aside, because we can talk about this later if you'd like, but the government, in addition to having a small business requirement, they also can further set aside contracts for woman-owned small businesses or 8A or HubZone or veteran-owned business. So you can recommend that they set it aside. This is, and this is how they decide if there are companies, enough companies like that where they can set it aside. So by the time you, maybe you set up a meeting, you give them a demo. So now by the time that solicitation comes out, you've helped the government write that solicitation. You possibly even met with them, had some conversations with them, influenced how the solicitation was written. And you might even have set it aside for your type of business, which that in and of itself eliminates 80% of the competition. So that's just a small amount of the advice that I would give for a company and how they would approach something like this.
So I want to make sure that I understand this right, and I'm going to rephrase this a little bit into sort of our language here so that everybody follows this. The idea is that the government has to buy stuff, and everything they have to buy has to be procured. Everything that has to be procured follows strict guidelines because it's the government, it's our money, it's the people's money. So they have responsibility for complete transparency. They probably cannot do more things than they can do, if I understand this correctly. So now I, as a novice or whatever, naive or enthusiastic, go into this. I said, wouldn't it be great to get a $5 million government contract? Yes, that would be amazing to get a $5 million government contract. So I subscribe to these services that are widely available, that are sending me all these solicitations. And all they do is they just crawl through the internet and pull out the solicitations, and they have a framework where I say, where would I want to work in? And then they'll send me the solicitations, and then I am ready to do my RFP. You, however, are saying, Rick, that by the time I get that solicitation, it's already too late because I missed the critical part of the relationship building, the fact finding, the research part. So you are saying that there's a whole part about this that most people don't even know, which is called the market research, is when somebody who is maybe a couple years out of college has this contract at the Department of Defense or is in the military somewhere and is now being tasked with this. They are not subject matter experts in blazers, in toilet paper, in technology, in consulting, in management, and leadership training. So they're tasked with now putting this RFP together that they're required to put out in front of the public following these rules. So you say that the trick here is that I need to figure out how I'm going to get in to this market research phase where this person basically just needs someone like me to say, hey, I got to do this management consulting proposal here. We're doing a training academy for women leaders, and we're going to want to run 3 cohorts of 25 people of the most hopeful in the Navy down in San Diego that need to be trained over the course of the next 6 months. What do I even need to put in there? They have no idea what a curriculum for leadership looks like. How do I get into this moment? And did I get all of this?
Yeah, correctly? I mean, almost all of it. The only thing that I would just add to is that the person putting that source of sought together, it could be someone a couple of years out of college, could be a first lieutenant, but it could also be a lieutenant colonel that has been doing it for 20 years and has master's degrees and all of that. So I just want to make sure if you're engaging with someone that put out a source of sought, I wouldn't assume that they're a junior person necessarily. I work with plenty of a full bird colonel contracting officer. You know, he is a master at putting companies on contract, but is not a master at whatever it is. It could be space technology. It could be civil engineering. It could be a construction project on the base. So literally the range is quite broad. I think you have it down there. That's where we really want to be engaging, is in that early phase. Going after some of these contracts to really, I shouldn't even say going after it. We're trying to influence how the government decides they're going to buy. And if you have something that's unique, right, about your offering, right? So let's say it's the training example that you just gave. Well, you might have an app on your phone that does some of the training, and you might have some proprietary technology or something that you developed. And so you could recommend, hey, I know you're looking for classroom training, but we find that our students, because we have commercial past performance, use this app, use this tool, maybe our books. So they do 30% better than our competitors. That's how you get your technology and your requirements into the solicitation. You might even demo the app for them, right? So now, if your competitor doesn't have that technology, it could still go to be competed, and you might not have any competitors because the proposals are scored very, very specifically, right? So when you write a proposal, each section is going to be scored, usually by a team. And they have a very fair process about that. But if you're the only one with the technology that meets those requirements, that makes it, you know, at least it influences it into your favor.
Yeah, I think I get the gist of it, that the idea is that I have to demonstrate subject matter expertise, but I cannot do that in the proposal because by the time the proposal comes out, other people already done their subject matter expertise a dazzling, and it is more favored toward what the understanding of the person is, which is what they learned. So we're going to address right after this quick message on how do we get into this phase. We will be right back. Are you looking for the hidden opportunities for you in this market? Or are you simply wanting to figure out what is your unique differentiation factor that makes clients want to work with you and not your competitors? If this resonates, I want to invite you to go to uncoverysession.com and schedule your 15-minute complimentary uncovery session with one of our business growth advisors that will take you through what your number one business growth blocker is, what you can do to remove it, and what your very best next step should be. And now let's get back to the show. Welcome back. Beate here with Rick, talking about a fascinating subject, really a very lucrative subject if you know how to do this right, and that is to get government contracts. We just covered a whole bunch of stuff, and now I am at the edge of my seat, the market research portion, Rick. You said that's the holy grail of everything. How would I even know that anything is in this research phase? How do I slide into that moment in the project phase?
Right, exactly. It's not intuitive. It's not something you know, if you go to sam.gov and you're looking for opportunities, nothing is going to say this is in the market research phase, except if you know that a sources sought response for a sources sought solicitation or a request for information from the government or a pre-solicitation, if you understand those words, those are basically keywords for were in market research. It means that the solicitation isn't out yet, but the government has a requirement and funding to put something on contract, right? So what you're looking for, so to get started, let's take it from the top, right? First thing that you need to do, you have to be registered to sell to the government. So you go to sam.gov, you register your business, even if you're going to be...
Which is free and easy, and there's 10,000 companies that want you to believe that you need to pay them, but you do not. You can figure this out on your own.
I just did a whole podcast episode on don't hire somebody to register your business. Because what happens, even if you look at it and you think it's a time saver, when you hire these companies, everything in there, they're going to be asking you questions about, hey, what's your TIN number? When was your business founded? Like every question in there, it's something only you can really answer, you or your team. You'll spend more time telling somebody else about it than doing it yourself. So
yeah, 100%.
Exactly. So I would go in there and do that yourself. The next thing that I would do, I would actually do a little bit before I just went out and looked for sources sought. I would probably do a little bit of market research on my own if I was a company. So what you can do is go to another free website. And by the way, there's a lot of paid tools out there, like you mentioned, right? But you don't need that, especially initially. You can go to usaspending.gov, and it's not an impossible website to navigate. You can go in there and search federal spending. I would go back the past 5 years. You can click the years you want to search through. And whatever it is that you're doing, there's probably a broad, what we call a NAICS code. Really, all that means is it's a category of purchasing. So, you know, again, pick your information technology, shoes and clothing, you know, you'll find something. And you can get at least a sense of how much is the government spending every year? And who are the agencies that are really buying? Is it the DOD? Is it Homeland Security, the VA? So at least that will give you, before you invest some time into this, you could see they're spending $5 billion every 3 years, and there's 20,000, you know, contracts that were awarded. So I think I can go after this. You can also, by the way, take a look at how much of that goes to small businesses versus large companies. But having said that, after that little rabbit trail, you can head back into sam.gov, and you can specifically search for sources sought in sam.gov for free. And so that is where, and by the way, there's a lot of ways to find out about opportunities. There's a lot of ways to sell to the government. Can you win a contract if you write a proposal on an RFP and that's the first time you're seeing it? Yes, of course, the law allows for that. But nine times out of 10, you're not going to win that. It might be 99 times out of 100. So if you're just getting started, I would look for the sources sought and only the sources sought in SAM.gov. And, you know, you'll have to play around with it a little bit, but you will be able to figure that out. And by the way, I think I've done podcast episodes and YouTube videos for free that you can just go take a look at DoD Contract Academy, either the podcast or the YouTube channel. But you can go through, search through that, find your sources sought. And what you're going to see is something that looks like, it'll be from an agency. We're going to take the Air Force because I came from there and I love the Air Force, of course. But so maybe it's the Air Force, maybe it's a construction project, right? So the Air Force is looking for a company to do a construction project. It might be in a specific, it will be in a specific state or country. And it'll give some of the requirements like, hey, we're trying to build maybe it's a lab in a hospital. Maybe there are security requirements. It will give you a little bit of the information and it'll ask you to provide them something. They're all a little bit different, but you know, one I just responded to was, hey, it was very specific, no more than 2 pages. It had, you know, 5 or 6 questions like, what is your technical capability briefly? Do you have any past performance? That's something that will come up. And if you're new, you're not going to have that. And that's fine. There were a few other questions on there but answer those questions to the best of your ability. And then you can also put in some things like, I am a woman on small business, or, hey, we've seen this work with our commercial clients. In fact, this one that I just responded to specifically asked for, hey, what do you think what requirements do you think should be in this solicitation when it comes out? And you can put all of that in there and send it in.
Yeah. I mean, I remember actually seeing some of these and I remember me snuffing at this. I'm like, why would I want to waste my time on that? And now I realize that it was the other way around while I was slaving away on these big proposals and trying for hours and hours and hours. And I mean, no more Arial 12 point, 1 inch
margin, yeah.
Margins of 6 copies, spiral bound, white, clear front cover, black cover. I mean, it's so ridiculously complicated and detailed. And then if your font is 11 points and not 12 points, you're automatically disqualified after you just slaved away because you are unable to follow instructions.
Follow directions. Yep. You know, it's interesting. Just filling out. So starting with the sources sought, because you're right. I can see exactly why you would have that impression. I would have that impression if I didn't know better. Right. But if you're doing something unique, like the technology we talked about, maybe it's something that you've built, it could result in a sources sought award where there is no competition, right? So that's not going to happen all the time. But so you might be avoiding a competition altogether just by responding to the sources sought. You're certainly going to make yourself more competitive to win the contract when the solicitation comes out. And even if you failed to influence the contract the way you want to, because some of these efforts are going to work better than others, one thing you are going to get, like for instance, even having a conversation with the contracting team or a program manager or engineer, the government can't possibly pack all of the information into the solicitation when it comes out. It's just, they can't do it. So often in one of the questions that I recommend asking, if you get somebody on the phone, which is like, hey, can you just talk about a couple of use cases? Like, why are you looking for this software suite? Or why are you looking for these services or this training? And they might tell you something like about your Navy training in California, right? That nobody else is going to know. Like, oh, well, this training's actually for transitioning military that are actually going to be leaving and going to get jobs. And right now they don't have any business training, but we want to figure out how to, you know, leverage their management skills and translate that into what a company might be looking for. You might get a critical piece of information out of a phone call that nobody else is going to have. And it's not because something nefarious is going on. It's just that you put the work in to talk to them and it was just one of the 1,000 things that training might be used for. So, but now how much more competitive can you write a proposal when it comes to that, if you have a section in there that's specific to the transitioning military person. So yeah, there's a lot of reasons for doing that and it is the long game. This is not quick money, but there's a reason that small businesses become large businesses with government contracts and that people go after them and stick with it. And it's because it is quite lucrative once you figure it out.
Yeah. And I think you said something really important. The thing that I had learned when I've done this, and I think I've done like 4 proposals and then I just gave up, is that you wish you had the opportunity to talk to them because a lot of the stuff doesn't make any sense or is contradictory or clearly copy and paste it from another proposal. And so as you're going through this, you go like, well, I cannot do it that way and that way. It's going to be either one or the other. You can't answer it satisfactory because it just doesn't make sense. But I do like the idea of this trusted partner opportunity to say, I'm going to invest the time in the relationship ahead of time and see that I can be that person that is a source in the category I'm in. And then that over time will lead me to potentially getting some of these contracts. Now, what is a time frame that I have to prepare myself for if I'm getting into this type of?
I would, if I was a company, and this is what I tell all our clients, I would be prepared to spend 12 to 18 months trying to win your first contract. It's not something that, of course, can you win a contract faster than that? Yes. I've had clients that have done it in 4 months, but those are for very specific types of contracts. By and large, you do have to spend some time, and it doesn't have to be a full-time job, but you're looking for different opportunities, setting up meetings with the government, influencing through the source of sauce. Like I said, maybe you're going to some conferences also to meet some folks. That's a great way to meet people and learn about use cases in the government. But about 12 to 18 months, because you know there what you're doing is you're going to start off with building a pipeline of opportunities ahead of time. You're going to start influencing those. And some of those are going to start winning probably within the 12 months. And what will keep you going is the fact that, you know, as you start submitting source of sought and you're getting good feedback from the government, you know, some of those are going to result in meetings where you're learning a little bit more. Maybe you get a sole source contract along the way, or you win a CBER contract. And then when you hit that 12 to 18 month mark, if you have been doing this consistently and, you know, consistently identifying opportunities and influencing them, what you should start having is a pipeline of opportunities that will turn into contracts consistently. So that's really the goal.
I like that. And so for somebody who's listened to this and says, there's not a chance in hell I'm going to do this by myself. I'm going to need Rick to help me with this. Where will they go and how can you help them?
Yeah, so they can go to dodcontract.com. That's kind of your entry level way in. We have a on-demand training academy there. And we also provide coaching and one-on-one consulting when the students need it. And we also have a more higher end traditional consulting. So if you have a business, you have revenue coming in, you don't have the time to do it, you know, we will start you off and put your strategy together. And there's other things that we can do too, as far as business development is concerned. And we also launched a pipeline and CRM tool recently, which we're pretty proud of. And that basically just takes you through the steps. You put an opportunity in there, walks you through all the steps, depending on if you're in like the woman-owned small business pipeline or the subcontractor pipeline. They have different steps slightly, depending on which one it is. So, but our students are using that in the academy too. So there's a lot of great value there.
I love it. Thank you so much. Well, I appreciate you being on the show. It has been very informative and it makes me almost want to go back and take a look at maybe I have missed a thing or two.
Hey, I can help you out.
Yes, we definitely will be talking in another call after this. So, Rick, thank you so much for being here. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And that is it for us today. I am appreciative that you're here. I'm very grateful for you to listen to the show or watch it. And until next time, this is your host, Beate Chalette, and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to or watching the show. We are so excited that you're here, and we are very grateful for you. Now it's our turn to ask you for help. Please do share this episode with one other person that needs to hear what we were talking about today. If there's any question you have about business, please do reach out to us and let us know. And don't forget to schedule your complimentary Uncovery session at uncoverysession.com, where one of our business growth advisors will help you to figure out what your number one business growth blocker is in only 15 minutes. And that's it for us today. Until next time.